Hi, and welcome to the Japan Baseball Weekly Podcast. It's for the week of March 23rd. It's the opening day that should have been special. I kept sitting in on a Saturday morning in Tokyo. With me as usual is Jim Allen. How you doing, buddy?
I'm doing well. I'm back in the back studio to keep the wife from waking up.
Okay. The back.
It's called keeping peace in the household. We're not in lockdown, but if I wake up the wife, I might be in lockdown.
You might be in lockout.
There's always that possibility, I suppose. How you doing, man?
Good. I had a nice run this morning and have a busy day and a busy weekend, and I'm going to try to get out to a baseball park tomorrow, so we'll see how that goes. Mm-hmm. I know they have limitations on the number of reporters who can enter.
Because we're talking about practice.
Because we're talking about practice. But it's very strange. This is the weekend that should have been opening weekend where we're supposed to be talking about games, and we sort of will be. We'll talk about these practice games that are going on, a few of them. We had four yesterday on Friday. We've got some more today and tomorrow. But on this week's show, we're going to go back in time, and I've got a chat from Okinawa camp when I talked to former Yakult pitcher Tony Barnett, who's now an advisor / scout for the Swallows. And then we're going to talk about the coronavirus practice games and take some hacks at some real high heat. So let's start swinging.
Clearing the bases!
All right, so I spoke with Tony Barnett. This is way back on February 8th. And that was my first day in Okinawa after waking up at an ungodly hour and getting the first train out to... Actually, I took a bus. Take that back. I took a bus from my station out to Haneda Airport and then flew to Okinawa, jumped in a rental car, and just started going to camps. And what happened was I went to one camp, and then I said, let's go to the Swallows camp. And as I told you, putting in those map codes in the car navigation, I went to Swallows camp, parked the car, got out, was walking around through there, saw some pictures, and I also saw Patrick Yu, so I threw him a go Swallows shout out.
Oh my gosh.
He was there.
Let's just hope that isn't on video, you know.
It is not.
Yeah, Gold Swallows' strangest home videos.
Yeah, it was weird to see him there because, you know, he's just a PA guy, right? But he was there with his wife and two children. It was really strange. So I saw them, met them, and I'm waiting. And I said, by the way, where's Tony? He said, you know, I saw him around here earlier, but I don't know. And so I started asking around. And luckily, Twitter is really helpful. I've been following Tony for a while. And I said, dude, I sent him a DM. I said, dude, I'm here. Where are you? And he said, I'm back at the hotel chilling.
Great.
I'm like, well, where's the hotel? I said, just give me the phone number and I'll head over if you got time to chat. And he said, yeah. So I jumped in the car and it was quite the traffic-filled drive, but I got over there.
Back to, like, Naha?
I don't remember where it was. Don't ask me. I just know what the map code said.
Okay.
I think, yes, Naha and some nice hotel. So Tony and I sat down in a cafe there on the first floor near the lobby. And obviously Tony pitched for the Swallows for a while. He spent 3 years with the Rangers after pitching from 2010 to 2015 with the Swallows, and had a couple of appearances last season for the Cubs. But man, I tell you, he looks really great. He lost a bunch of weight. He is in great shape. He's as gregarious as ever. He's a fun chat. He's going to reference Aaron Gile a couple times in this chat, so be on the lookout for that. It was a really fun chat, so let's take a listen. All right, I cannot believe I'm sitting here with Tony Barnett.
Believe it.
He said he's like 30 pounds lighter. He looks like a different guy, but he hasn't aged a minute, it seems. How you doing, buddy? Good to talk to you.
I'm doing well, John. I'm doing well, my friend.
All right, welcome back to Japan, and welcome back to the Swallows.
Thank you.
How did you end up back here, man?
Well, first I retired. I stepped away from baseball, and honestly, man, I wasn't looking for nothing. I was just hanging out at home and, you know, being dad, taking the kids to school every day, you know, and, you know, trying to recover from a life of baseball. dealing with all the things I needed to deal with, physically and all that. And, I've always kept in contact with the Swallows. You know, Michael Okamura, he's our international guy, guys on the team. I've always kept in close contact with a lot of guys. And when my retirement was basically, for the most part, it was official when I made that, Instagram post about it.
Right.
But like I had retired before that, I just, didn't know the right way to do it. Didn't know, I kind of wanted to wait and see if it really was. I kind of gave myself till January 1st and then a couple weeks after that even to, see if that itch was going to return and if I really wanted, if I wanted to dedicate myself again to it.
Right.
To be able to go through everything that I knew I needed to do to get back to the top level that I needed to do perform, and it just never came. Okay. And I knew at that moment I was like, I've got other plans. I've got another life to live, and I'm gonna go do it.
Okay.
Michael Okamura reached out. He just reached out to me, and we were talking, and when I was officially about retiring, we were talking about it, and they kind of said, do you want to come work with us? And it was funny because I woke up to a line message. I woke up at like 3:30 in the morning one morning.
Mm-hmm.
And I go out to the couch because I was like, I'm just
That's
awake.
Not morning, by the way, but go ahead.
Well, I mean, I'm up.
I'm up at 5 and I still don't consider 3:30 morning, but go ahead.
Yeah, I mean, I'm up at 5, 5:32, but like 3:30, I was up at 3:30. I was looking at my phone. I was like, I got a message. I'm out on the couch just hanging out, waiting, chilling. And, I sent a message and it was, Michael, and we started talking a little bit. And, he kind of made the offer and I was like, I wasn't really thinking about it, but I was like, yeah, that's the answer right there is yes. I was like, I love this team. I like these people. These are my people. This is my team. This is the organization that built me.
Right. So you just put the ball down.
Well, I mean, I'd put the ball down in July.
Well, still just.
That was seven. That was 7-8 months. But with my mindset, 7-8 months is a lifetime.
It's a long time. Yeah, sure.
With the way that my brain goes.
Yours and every other player, I think.
Right.
That's a long time.
I waited till my wife woke up and, I asked her. I was like, hey, this is what's going on, and she looked at me. And she was like, well, you got to say yes. And I was like, that was like cemented in stone right there. And so yeah, I replied and I was like, yeah, I'd love to. And here we sit.
So you ready to do this thing? I mean,
well, I ain't coaching.
Well, what do you do?
Don't get me wrong.
Advising,
I mean, it's advising. I'll be living, living back home. Aaron and I, because basically scouting, cross checking, and also advising. I've been talking with a lot of guys, out here at camp already. Just trying to fill in and help in wherever I can. With any bit of knowledge I, guys like mine and me and Aaron have, from our experiences here in Japan, just try to help everybody feel comfortable, especially with like new foreigners, try to, let them be comfortable in their shoes. Cause we know the difficulties that, guys like myself and other guys that, play around the guys in that play in Japan, have been here for a while. We know the struggles and we know the speed bumps that are going to come along the way, and I was lucky to have guys like Guile. When I first showed up.
Yep.
And so I've always tried to pass that along, be a good teammate like Aaron was to me. It really is cool that I get to work with him again, because this guy's a great dude.
That I know.
Yeah.
So one quick question before we keep going. How long are you going to keep the Jim Allen style hair length?
Well, let's be honest. No offense, Jim, but I mean, mine's better. man, I'll probably see how long I can get him before someone in the organization like raises a flag. But
all right,
I just think long hair, man, that's me.
All right, now what's the mission with this gig that you're doing with the?
Well, I mean, like I just said, the mission is to help any way I can, and if my eyes and ears and my abilities to see guys that could potentially work over here and to kind of see things like that, that's my job here is because me and Aaron will be back home in Arizona. We'll be traveling, cross-checking guys that the team possibly wants us to look at or things like that, and just give our opinions and try to try to dig a little deeper, see what some of these guys are about, see who kind of see on the backside, see who they are as people, because that's one of the big things about Japanese baseball is coming across the pond. It's character counts.
Mm-hmm.
Definitely counts. It's a big thing. So know, that's pretty much the basis of it. You know, just, you know, keep my eyes and ears open, you know, and just try to help out wherever I can. And if it's if I'm here and, you know, helping guys, you know, talk about pitches or grips and stuff like that, or, you know, possible things that come up, you know, it's, you know, scenarios and situations on and off the field, you know, we've talked enough, man. You know me.
Yeah, I know.
I'll talk to just about anybody and, you know, I'll help out wherever I can. You know, it's just, I just want to, you know, do right and, you know, help this team win.
Now, I have my own opinions, which I have expressed on the show about what kind of team the Swallows should build. But you pitched in that stadium. You know what it's like playing that many games there in a season. What kind of team do you think the Swallows should try to build as it goes forward?
Well, I mean, every manager is different. And now that Takatsu's got the helm, you know, we'll see what kind of team he's going to build. You know, culturally, you know, he's a different manager. You know, he's played in just about every country that plays baseball, you know, and probably some that don't, you know, but, you know, and so, like, even then, you know, you got the, you know, our pitching coach, Saito, you know, guy was so good for so long, you know, and again, he's got a world of experience under his belt, you know, from being in the majors, being here and coming back pitching until he was 45. You know, I mean, yeah, because I think his last year in the States, he was 41, which is unbelievable.
Yeah.
It's unbelievable. You know, that'd be me playing for another 5 years, and I'm like, man, I don't know if I got it in. I don't know if I got that fight.
Yeah.
You know, so I'm sitting here, you know, with you talking about retirement, so I know I don't got that fight.
Yeah.
Well, you know,
something I always talk about is the mental strain and the mental stress that a player goes through, whether you pitch or not, every day.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
And so, especially in a bullpen role, because you're on call.
Yes.
You know, you're on call. You know, you're just sitting there, you know, and you know the situations when that phone rings. You know, it doesn't matter if you're up or down or, you know, if it's your spot or not, that phone rings and it, you know, it's Pavlov's dog.
Right.
You know, it triggers something in everybody. So you're right. You know, the mental aspect of just staying in tune is tough.
Now, have you seen some of the players, especially the pitchers so far, in your few days here?
Yeah, I mean, I've gotten to see just about everybody throw bullpens.
Okay.
You know, I've been, you know, hanging out, watching practices, you know, it's business as usual first week of camp. You know, everyone's trying to get their, you know, feet wet. Everyone's, you know, getting their legs underneath of them.
Right.
Teams are, you know, they're starting to set the guidelines of, you know, what plays are going to be played, what, you know, who's, you know, what our practice schedules are going to be, you know, just trying to get everybody into that groove of this is us now, this is the job, this is what we're going to be doing day in and day out. Let's get comfortable in it.
Any standouts so far you've seen?
Well, I mean, I'll tell you what, you know, it was the first baseman Murakami, you know, I was jarred by the size of that young man. You know, he's, you know, obviously, I've kept up to date and you had a stellar first year.
Yes.
You know, I mean, at that age and, you know, it just a stellar first year for a 19-year-old, you know, young
baby
man to come in and to put up those kind of numbers. I like, you know, like Suarez. Suarez throws a heavy baseball, man. That thing jumps. You know, even McGuff, you know, like, it's just free and easy.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's really interesting for me to be on that side of the net now. You know, like, talking about other guys, you know, like, what do I see and stuff like that. It's kind of an odd feeling, you know, but it feels right. You know, it feels kind of natural, you know, just to be watching baseball and, like, breaking stuff down and, you know, just seeing what I can do to help out. You know, it's an interesting view.
Yeah, it's fun. I mean, I've been doing it the whole time.
Right, you know, but, you know, going from a player to that, you know, and, like, turning that, you know, flipping that switch to the other side, you know, for a lot of guys, I think it could possibly be a little, you know, nerve-wracking, but, you know, I'm pretty comfortable in most situations I put myself in.
Now, have you gotten to see the rookie Okugawa yet?
No.
Because he's been with the farm.
Yeah, well, I've seen video.
Yeah.
You know, I've seen a lot of video of him, and, I mean, oof.
Oof.
Big, tall kid, you know, stays tall, powers through the zone, like, powers straight home, his control, you know, good control for that age, you know, and that tall and that kind of, that stuff, like, I mean, he's got a plus slider, you know, he's throwing, like, a changeup split or whatever, it was just falling off the table in the videos. I was like, man, this is a real deal right here. I was like, this kid's got good control, he's got good, you know, good velocity, you know, fastball jumps, breaking balls are, you know, guys were, you know, and this was high school, you know, guys were missing by a foot,
mm-hmm.
You know, I'm like, but still, like, he, you know, he was outmatching dudes at that level, and that's all you can ask at every single level is somebody outmatching, like, the competition. And,
right.
And
right.
At the level that he was at, you know, he, by, you know, long and far outmatched that competition.
So, obviously, this team has not done well the past two seasons. Had some success before that, but I'm looking at the teams. That's why I was asking you what kind of team you would build moving forward. I know that it has a new manager and all this other stuff, but anything that you've seen in camp that gives you some hope that this year can be a turnaround season for this team?
You know, I haven't, you know, it's obviously this is my second day. I haven't seen a whole lot, you know.
Okay.
It's a little premature for, you know, sure. for that, I think, you know, because I'm still getting my feet wet too. You know, I'm still starting to, you know, get to know, because we counted today on the pitching staff, there's only three guys that were here when I was there. You know, yeah, Ishikawa.
Never getting rid of him.
I hope not. You know, that man's a national treasure. You know, it was Ishikawa. Well, I'm having a brain fart as we see.
Well, Aoki was there,
I
right?
played with Aoki 10 and 11,
right.
and then he took off to the States. No, I'm just talking about pitchers.
Oh, just you pitchers.
Know, there's a decent amount of position players that are left.
Pitchers.
But, you know.
You didn't tell me there was going to be a quiz.
Ishikawa, Ishiyama. And there's one more, and it's blanking me right now, but I can't, you know, off the top of my head.
Ogawa?
Yeah, Ogawa. Right, okay. Ogawa, yeah. Those three. Yeah, those
I
three.
I got one.
Yeah, my man. See, teamwork makes a dream work. You know, so there's only three guys that I'm really truly familiar with. You know, Kondo came over from Oryx. You know, I remember him vaguely.
Right. After his surgeries.
Mm-hmm. Okay. You know, so I mean, you know, I don't know. I just got to sit back and watch, and, you know, it's a young team. Which is, I mean, it's a really young team. You know, when I was here, we had a decent amount of veteran guys. And, you know, our problem in the past was depth. You know, and so.
And injury.
And that, and, well, yeah, that's what I'm saying.
Injury bugs. You know, that was thing, like depth. On your outfield or infield.
When depth, you know, when you're short on depth like we were in the past, you know, it's just like if a couple guys go down, it's dire. You know, it's tough. And that's why we were so successful in 15. You know, because we had a team that stayed relatively healthy for the most part, and the guys that when they did go down, the next guy stepped up and did the job.
Right.
You know, and that's how championships are won. You know, unfortunately, we didn't win the Nippon series. You know, but
nobody beats the Hawks. So.
I mean, they you know, we were talking about that. I was talking about that with Igarashi today. You know, I was like, man, you guys were good. You know, we were good too, but you guys just had the full package that year. You know, and
that year as well. Yeah.
Yeah, that year as well.
Well, man, we certainly appreciate it. Good luck with the gig, and we hope to keep in touch and keep talking to you as you go through this.
Hey, man, I'll be around now, you know?
I'll be a square.
John, thanks, brother.
All right, so, yeah, lots of jokes there, lots of fun things, some comments about your hair and all kinds of stuff. What stood out for you?
Well, I that was kind of the haircut that I'm going to not get at the barber's, you know? Hey, this will be the second hair joke I've had this week, so all right.
Well, it was back in February, so I think mine's first.
Yeah, well, mine came when I heard that the Ohio has closed all their beauticians and barber shops, and I said that basically I was, damn, my luck. I was planning to go to Cincinnati to get my first haircut in 17 years.
Hashtag.
Okay. So anyway, yeah, it was really interesting. And I love the idea that Yakult, it's not a Yakult idea, but the idea of having somebody, as he said, to show you the ropes, because the ropes are different. And what you think, sometimes what you think are ropes are in fact zip lines that will take you straight down. And other times they're things you need to cling to, and other times they're the third rail you're not supposed to touch.
Okay.
So what I mean by that riddle is that Japan's full of different definitions for the same thing. And there's an expression in Japanese called tatemae. A tatemae is a way of saying something that's not sayable. You tell somebody on the surface what you're supposed to tell them in a way that they will get the message somehow, that you're not supposed to ask that question.
Right.
And it's a way of basically avoiding trouble by giving uncomfortable answers. You know, so your boss, you ask your boss, can I leave early? And your boss won't say, yeah, go ahead, because your boss isn't allowed to say go ahead. Your boss can't take responsibility for that. So instead, your boss will say, well, I had this experience, your boss will say, well, have you checked under every student's desk to make sure they're not hiding from you? And my boss took me around the office to look under every desk and to look for each student and says, when you've checked off all that list, and the answer to the question is, you can go, but don't ask me. And what I mean, and I had been in Japan at that point about 7 years. And I didn't really understand. I heard about the concept. I knew about the concept. But until you've really experienced it in its weirdest forms, you don't really know.
Right.
You don't understand it. And having guys who, in a baseball context, like Aaron and Tony, can tell you, when they say this, it means this.
Mm-hmm.
And when they say that, it means this. It doesn't mean what they're telling you. So, and of course, there's no foolproof method because there's also the Bobby Valentine syndrome, which is your experience.
Syndrome.
Your experience about Japanese baseball is your experience and not the experience.
Correct.
So there's always that. I mean, people are always wrong because they're because they make generalizations based on their context. But yeah, that is so important because this is something Japanese teams do really well now, is having these guys who know what it's like.
Mm-hmm.
It used to be like every foreign player, they'd come over here and they'd have their interpreter. And their interpreter had never quite, they may know about, but they may be bicultural and they may understand American society and Japanese society and baseball society, even on both sides of the Pacific, but they haven't been in the player's shoes to interpret that. So now it's up to Aaron and Tony to explain in a way that the players can understand, and that's always going to be a challenge. It's a challenge for all of us. So I look forward to hearing, Tony's, I don't know if we'll quite get to Tony's war stories about when I told somebody this and they thought that and the manager thought that and I wish I hadn't opened my mouth, but right. We'll see. Okay, how about you? That's enough from me. How about you?
I like the backdoor slider he threw to start off the chat when he opened up by saying that, you know, he was trying to recover from a life of baseball.
Yeah.
And
he said,
physically and all that. And it reminded me of the comment I made last week on the show talking about that mental preparation, because here we're talking about a guy who was a reliever and who got mentally ready to pitch every day. And when he talked about the phone going off in the bullpen, whether it was your turn or someone else's turn, or no matter what the inning was, it was like Pavlov's dog and it triggered something and the adrenaline gets going. And I thought that was one. And then the other thing was that he was very diplomatic in not answering my question.
I noticed
about
that.
About what kind of team he would build to play at Jingu. Now, I thought part of it was because, okay, he's in a difficult position, and that's why I didn't press him on it. He's not in charge, and I'm not even sure he's part of, you know, a heavy part of the decision-making process. So to answer that question and to put his manager in a position where this is what I would do, I thought maybe I put him in a compromising position with the question, so I didn't press him on it. But I thought he did a really excellent job of not, you know, answering that question, but giving me some, you know, giving me some comment there, because it's very hard. And talking about the fact that there's a new manager, he's a first year guy, and like I said, he had only been in camp, as he expressed, a couple days.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the camp opened, had been open for more than a week, essentially, that was the eighth day, but he hadn't been there that long. And for him to say, okay, I know exactly what kind of people we're going to look for, I know exactly what kind of team this is, I don't think he was in that kind of position. So I gave him a break on that one.
One piece of advice is, if you really want leverage in the future when you get somebody into a compromising position, make sure that you've got photos.
Oh, gosh.
And the other one.
You know, when you set me up like that, I'm thinking, oh, this is going to be a good, wise information from the grizzled veteran here. I perked up and I'm ready to hear something. And
Espionage 101.
Espionage 101 here with, yeah.
Okay. Right. Okay. But then the other thing is, yeah, just to get back to your point, and the real part of your point is, I'm not, I certainly understand what you're saying, and And he doesn't want to. I think he also is, as you said, just there and doesn't want to speak out of turn and or maybe hadn't really thought of it in a while. Although probably as a pitcher and Tony, I should having knowing Tony, he's probably thought about it a lot. You know,
yeah.
This were my team. If I was on the mound, these are the guys I want playing and not okay.
Well, this is the thing is to interject. Obviously he's part of the process now, so
right.
I'm sure. He has an opinion on it. I don't think he was in a position to share it. But
sure. Sure.
If you don't think Tony Barnett has an opinion about it, then you don't know anything about
Tony. Sure. Yeah, fair enough. And the other thing I just wanted to say was I think you guys, you know, you guys should have a podcast because you had perfect timing. I mean, that was – I was impressed. I'm thinking like – you know what I was thinking? I could have Saturday mornings off.
Or Sunday night
or whatever. Yeah, like it's
yeah,
like
have those off.
My wife's over here giving me a thumbs up, you know.
So is mine. She can't even hear or see us.
they're doing it in their sleep.
exactly. All right. Well, no, I said before the show, I wouldn't trade you for anybody.
Yeah, me neither, man. This is prime time, baby.
Yeah, I might cut you, but I wouldn't trade you for anybody.
Well, I'd have to wait and see what prices I got on auction on eBay. So.
Right. And then my last comment about the chat was his eye test comment, basically saying he's going to go over and dig deeper on guys and see what these guys are all about and talking about the character and character counts and saying,
yes.
Saying it's a big thing. I think that's so huge. And that's one thing I think as observers, and I think we're all in that category, whether we're a fan or anybody, because I wanted to, my theme for this chat was the other side of the net, because that's the comment he made that really, really stuck with me after we left. So anybody on the other side of the net, you know, you don't want to see guys with poor character. You don't want to see a guy with a bad attitude on the field or have questionable behavior off the field. And I think that chases fans away quicker than anything else. Whether, you know, you just see a guy do something on a opposing team and you think, oh, I'm so glad that guy's not on the team that I root for or play for. Or whether you hear about something in the news and you think, oh my goodness, that's terrible. How could that team have hired such a player? So,
well, it's ironic.
You want good people and you want good players, but you want good people.
It's ironic because, you know, we've had that quote in the past. Eric Schulstrom said basically, yeah, rule number one for the Carp is being a good citizen.
Correct.
And I mentioned that to some people in almost in the same phrase where I said, I did a study 7 or 8 years ago about the value of imported players and for the money they were ostensibly paying these guys, the Swallows and the Hiroshima Carp were by far the most efficient teams in NPB. Of course, and then, of course, it was ironic at that time too because the Swallows couldn't afford to, the Carp couldn't afford to keep them until they moved into their new stadium. And the Swallows weren't going to give them big contracts, so they all ended up playing for the Omiri Giants back in the day. And Tony was on the cutting edge of the new wave when they offered him and Vladimir Ballantyne and Lastings Millage long-term contracts, which you know paid off huge for them. It really allowed them to to win the 2015 Japan Series, the Central League pennant. They didn't win the Japan Series, but
no, they did not.
They did not. But having said that, one of my Twitter followers said, Swallows, citizenship, come on. Because they're referring to a guy who had lied to law enforcement officials about some very nasty criminal activity and who was being passed from team to team to team. And the Swallows signed this guy. And I think that's fair. But having said that, that was before they brought Aaron and Tony on board.
Okay.
So I think that's – I don't know if those two things are connected. I've basically said Michael Okamura, their international director, was basically – you know, he's not a spring chicken and they needed more help. And that was my first assessment, but I think having Tony and having Aaron as guys who've been here on the field and knowing what the expectations are and what the demands are to give that, you know, to test the people's makeup from from their perspective was valuable.
Okay. All right. Sounds great. Let's make a four-seam transition, and I've labeled this segment opening closed. We've got more silence. Like I said, this was supposed to be opening day weekend, and the circumstances with the coronavirus have put the entire sports world, the whole world's ecosystems in jeopardy. And I had a conversation recently with a friend during which I said, you know, during times like these, which we've never seen in our lifetime, I think the frivolous things and the luxuries are the first things to be jettisoned. And I think sports kind of fall into that category of maybe frivolous. I don't know about luxury, but because we've had to turn off all the sports. And but it's such a part of our economic fabric now that it's impacting so many people to not just play games. You know, it's not like, you know, it's not like it's just about sports. It's about life now for a lot of people. So, in the meantime, I've put out some feelers just to get a sense of how some of the foreign people or foreign players or foreign guys feel about traveling around the country to play these practice games. And I'll keep the names anonymous because I think some of these are controversial. So said one, on the road, we're mostly together, but at home, you're pretty much on your own. And that makes me worry. Because we're on trains and buses and around food and staff and people whom you have no idea who they've been around. So that's one opinion about playing. And again, you're interacting with all these guys on your team and traveling around to play these practice games. But at home, you know, people say goodbye. It's not like they're like self-quarantining the team to keep them away and out of coronavirus's harm's way. So that's one thing. And then said another player, they're sending us all around Japan to play practice games. It makes no sense. So these are just a couple of examples. And I would assume there's some extra sense of uneasiness because you're in a foreign country.
Right. Especially for the new guys.
And so I would bet that many people feel that way. But I'm sure some people are not really worried because we haven't had a situation where I could actually have easily predicted that there would be a mass outbreak in Japan because of the proximity of people riding on trains, you know, the way society is, that there's a lot of bowing and not a lot of contact that way, but on trains and in transit situations, there is a heck of a lot of contact. And we just haven't seen the major breakout. But then I told someone else that, yes, we haven't seen a breakout majorly, because when you get confirmed cases, that means people have been tested. So I don't know anyone in my circle who has been tested yet.
Correct.
Well, so if you don't test, you don't get confirmed cases. So just because there haven't been confirmed cases doesn't mean you don't have a high number.
On our PL show, I asked, before we got into the PL predictions, I asked if you had ever had anything that symptoms like, or not the symptoms, but any symptoms, you know, sort of like, oh, you had a headache or whatever, and you thought, wow, is this one of them? Well, I had one of the ones that they list as a symptom in America, but they don't list as a symptom in Japan. And so I looked at the website here, how do you know what to do if you think you might have coronavirus, you might have contracted it or been infected by it. And it's basically this. They have a list of symptoms. And if you have one of these symptoms for 4 consecutive days, then you call a number. Or if you've been in contact with a confirmed person, a person who's been confirmed and tested, then you can be tested. But basically, you call the number and then they tell you to sit and wait.
Yeah, don't just run off to the hospital. You can't do that either.
Exactly. You call the number. So basically, they're making the target for testing so small that you need to be a marksman to hit it. And so, and here's the problem. A lot of the coronavirus symptoms are very mild. And a lot of people are asymptomatic in carrying the virus. So Japan is basically saying, well, we're not going to test any of those people. So you could, it's considering the things I've had, I could very well be a carrier. I haven't felt really sick. I felt kind of blah a couple of days and this and that. And I could very well be a carrier, but I don't know. I haven't had a fever. I haven't had any of the other symptoms. So I don't know whether that's the whether that's the case. And I certainly know I don't have enough to be tested, and I don't feel confident enough that I'm actually sick not to go to work. So am I around spreading the disease? I, as I said before, I always act as if I am a carrier.
And that's what they've told us to do, and that's what I've done. And even at work, it's so hard because these are your friends. You see them all the time, and you want to be, you want to have that camaraderie. But yeah, I just kind of...
And John is a very...
I'm a puppy. I'm very warm, passionate.
Yeah, puppy. Exactly. He's a young puppy. Compared to me, everybody's a young puppy. Okay.
All right. So let's talk about the games. Yesterday we had four games. The Swallows beat the Tigers 7-2 at home, and SoftBank. We'll get to that one last. So I'll save that one because I know you watched the whole thing. The Dragons squeaked by the Carp 4-3, despite a five-out. I called it a five-out ninth inning save because they made a couple of bad defensive plays that helped the Carp score a couple runs. And then the Lions beat the Nippon Ham Fighters. And Carter Stewart Jr. pitched really, really well in some aspects on the scoreboard, and really, really wildly in reality at PayPay Dome, and a 4-2 win over the Marines. And you watched that game, would you?
I did. I've been really eager because I've been on this story kind of before it happened.
Mm-hmm.
And I've been pretty excited about the whole thing, and I've been able to get the audio of his post games from my colleagues in my office. And
oh, excellent!
Yeah, so I've been able to hear his analysis or his comments, which are kind of interesting. And basically, I have a more thorough analysis on my website, jbalallen.com. But essentially is this. What I'd heard about Carter Stewart as a prospect was that he had elite spin on his breaking ball, and that's exactly what we saw. I mean, just plus spin, like better than 95% of major leaguers.
Wow.
On his curveball. And that thing really hums. Okay, his fastball is solid. It's got some good movement. He has good quality spin. And that's basically what he brought to the table. His command in terms of hitting the glove was really poor. And he had very few times where he actually didn't force the catcher to reach.
Okay, so let's go through his numbers. He threw five innings, 93 pitches, allowed three hits. He walked five. He struck out five. And he allowed one run. So.
Yep. The one,
like I said, on the scoreboard, really, really good.
Yep.
In reality,
yeah. But, okay, so, I mean, I go, there's more detail on the website, but basically, yeah, he's a big guy, and he's becoming, and Matt Skrmetta, his friend and scout, the Hawks scout, said, basically, you know, he's been doing a lot of physical training with the Hawks in the off season, and I can see him being... a really, really powerful, stable pitcher. You know, I think that the lower body can even get more muscle on it. And when he does that and his balance is easier to maintain,
right?
This guy is going to be absolutely dynamite because that spin is just electric.
Yeah, I'm just thinking back when I saw him after he signed and came to Japan, and we saw glimpses of him in the crowd sitting and watching a game, he looks so much bigger already now. And I know that happens with young guys because they start to fill out a little bit, and he was a teenager when he got here. Anyway, he's starting to get big, but I mean, he looked like a man yesterday.
Yeah, he did. and he got a huge workout program from the Hawks before they put them on the plane. They handed him his homework for the winter, and it was a pretty rigorous training. And apparently the reports I heard was that when the Hawks front office people went to Melbourne, Florida to see how he was doing in December, they were, you know, the eyes were popping.
Good, good, good. Well, that's good to see. I mean, you mentioned it in the PL prediction special. The Salt Bank Hawks have a plethora of great import players, and you're going to crack that.
Yeah, that's a tough one. Own
special lineup that you have to crack, and to get in and get some time is going to be tough.
Yeah,
I tell you, he, you know, it's all about the results.
I'll tell you. I predict there's going to be a point at this year, maybe this summer, if there's baseball being played this summer or next, when they say, okay, forget that stuff. This guy's he's got the best stuff on our team. Well, you know, he's not a Japanese pitcher because he doesn't have, he threw three pitches. He threw 50% of the time, or about 55% of the time, he threw his four seamer. And he threw his curve about 30, maybe 40%. And he threw seven or maybe six or seven changeups. I think he may have thrown a two seamer. Apparently he has a two seamer, but he didn't, I didn't see any, or I remember only one. So, he's not a Japanese pitcher and he doesn't have six pitches. But he was, he had a really good pickoff move. And of course the Marines have never seen him before.
Mm-hmm.
So that's something for him, but they had a real hard time getting the barrel on the ball. He threw a lot of fat pitches location wise, but they weren't able to hit him because they were moving more than, you know, they had more movement horizontal. Yeah, they had more vertical movement than they were quite used to.
Yeah, that's what I noticed. A couple of the pitches that he got some swings and misses on in the highlights that I saw were right there. But you know, if you don't know the sequence, you don't know maybe what the batter got,
yep,
was looking for, was sitting on, or got fooled by, yeah, or whatever. But I saw the swings and misses. So it was good for him. Well, and mm-hmm. And good for the Hawks.
And the other thing is that, you know, the home run that Brandon Laird hit was probably, I won't say it was one of the worst pitches he threw, but it was, as far as spin goes, it was kind of a lazy fastball. And it was up, I mean, it was a good fastball and it was a good swing. And they did get some good swings on it. And they did hit the ball right out of a couple of people. But he threw a lot, you know, he missed a lot of pitches, you know, dead red. And guys got under the ball.
Mm-hmm.
Because the spin was just too hard for him to handle. And so it's going to be fun. He's going to be a lot of fun. I wish, I'm looking forward to this because I might get a subscription to PLTV because they have the Western League games that the Hawks have.
Oh, yes.
And
yes,
I can watch them. And I can watch them. So.
Okay. All right. Moving on, I did watch two games. I watched the Swallows beat the Tigers, sort of. I think I watched the 40-minute game recap on that one. But I did have it on while I had the Dragons game was on TV, Dragons and Carp game. So I did like Yasutaka Shiomi of the Swallows, who's been looking like a guy who's aching to have a breakout year throughout.
Yeah, I didn't think he had an arm, and I've seen a couple of places where he did actually make some good throws, so I've upgraded my rating on his arm. I think he may develop a little power. I'm still, you know, we'll see.
Yeah, he can have power at Jingu, so.
Well, that's not the same. That's not what I meant. I know it isn't,
but I'm just saying, you know, the numbers might be there if they get a season in and you look up and he makes the kind of contact he has been making regularly throughout the spring. Some of those drives might go out of Jingu, but yeah, he looks like a guy, like I said, might have a breakout season, and then
and he's got electric speed as well. I mean, he's got plus speed, so that's he has a chance to be a kind of poor man's Tetsuto Yamada in the outfield.
Yep. And then Alcides Escobar at short had two hits, and like I said, they beat the Tigers 7-2. And Escobar, I thought that was one of the pickups. That type of player exists in Japan. He's just not as polished. So I thought, because I didn't think Escobar was going to be much of a hitter, but you just never know. But I thought, you know, they really wanted to calm things down defensively at at the Swallows. They were horrible around the infield, basically, except for Yamada and at second. And I thought that was the reason for that pickup. And I think he's going to play really good defense. But if he adds, you know, any kind of offense, I think it's a real plus for them. So he had a couple hits for yesterday.
Yeah, definitely a different kind of a batter than we're used to seeing in Japan. Yeah.
Certainly. And then the kid who's now a second-year pitcher, Noboru Shimizu, who pitched two strong innings or two scoreless innings for the Swallows to start that game. Remember, I think I told listeners last year, his grandmother goes to my gym. Well, I changed gyms, so she goes to my previous gym, but she's there every day. And she said, yeah, my grandson is playing for the Swallows and blah, blah, blah. So he had a good start for them. So that's good. That's a good start off for them. And then I watched the Dragons game, and, you know, Daichi Osada for the Carp just looked fantastic. I don't know that the Dragons made good contact on anything early on the first 5-6 innings, and then they scored 4 runs in the 7th inning. A couple of like a bad hop single for Shuhei Takahashi, and some other a walk. I think this new catcher, this rookie catcher, Yuya Gunji, he got a walk. Worked a really good at bat and got a walk in that inning, and they scrambled up 4 runs and then almost gave them all away with a couple bad plays in the 9th inning with Toshiya Okada on the mound trying to get a save. But they came away with a 4-3 win. It was pretty, I guess, really good for them. So that was fun to watch for sure. So I'm glad some of these games are on TV. I'm just, you know, I know people are aching for baseball or some kind of something to do and watch.
Yeah, I mean, the practice games are fun because they're sort of like in the time of regular season, but they're also experiments. So the Hawks could use it to throw Carter Stewart Jr. out there and use Takuro Furuya to start that game. And he was a fun pitcher. He had really good spin, not great heat. I mean, he was throwing about 90 miles an hour, 147 kilometers per hour with his fastball. But he had some good movement. He had a nice slider that I liked, and his fastball had some good movement for a three-quarter guy. And it made me think of something Jerry Sands said the other day about how well, I think he said all Japanese and Korean pitchers, but I think it's more a case of some. They stay behind the ball really well. They get really, they don't just get spin. They get spin that's in the proper access to the direction of the ball.
Okay.
In other words, so they get top spin on the ball, and they get like perfect top spin. And what I mean by that is the ball's not, if the ball's traveling, basically they get it, they maximize the spin on the ball by the way they release it. And this is a new thing in the States, and it's kind of a new thing in Japan. A lot of people have it naturally, but Furuya had it, Carter Stewart's got it. And this is where you'll see guys who, even if their numbers are eye-popping, or if their spin numbers can be ordinary, if they have the most efficient way of releasing the ball so that the spin they impart on the ball is exactly perpendicular to the direction of the ball, it really jumps more than a ball of that speed and that spin should jump.
All right, Scout, slow down.
Sorry.
I got you.
Okay. So Furuya was one of those guys, and I thought, wow, this kid's going to be fun. So yeah, the practice games have been fun in that respect because, okay, we're ready for regular season baseball, but we're still getting tryout camp.
Right. So like I said, it's real difficult. I said at the beginning of this segment, it's real difficult with the coronavirus to keep all these moving pieces safe. And I can't believe we haven't seen one case in NPV yet of like I said, it only takes maybe a player or a staff member. It doesn't have to be, it could be, obviously they don't have tickets, sales and all that stuff, but it could be somebody in an office back at the facility or something. It just takes one person, and I think they'd have to shut the whole thing down.
Yep.
So it is amazing that we haven't seen anything yet, and let's keep our fingers crossed.
Yep.
But in the meantime, let's move on. A couple notes. I just wanted to mention that there was things that we didn't get into either special. The CL prediction show special or the PL one. And that's guys like Takashi Saito, who is back as a pitching coach for the Swallows, whom Tony Barnett mentioned in his chat today or on this episode. I think that's a real big deal for that team to have that kind of a guy. Just like Tony said, a guy who's pitched in the States and he's pitched a lot of places, to go with Takatsu, who he said he pitched in everywhere they had baseball and some places that they didn't have baseball.
That was a great comment.
And then we've got Michihiro Ogasawara, Guts, who's back with the Fighters as their head batting coach. And that's what the book says. I don't know what that does. I think it's a head coach slash batting coach. But he had spent some time with the Chunichi Dragons as the farm manager, and to have him back just in the house, I think, is a big boost for the Fighters. That's one of the reasons I didn't think that they would finish last this year. Although I did watch the Pro Yaku News special, and I think a lot of people don't have, not that I think, a lot of the guys on that show didn't have high hopes for the Fighters, in part because SoftBank and the Lions were so good, but at least last year they were so good. But what do you think about those moves with getting those coaches back?
Well, I like it, and I talked with Guts about a year and a half ago at an old timers game they had at Tokyo Dome, and he said he was just fascinated by learning how to be a coach. And I heard the word around the Dragons is that he's a really tough customer. He's a tough coach. Really hyper demanding. And good. I don't know. He doesn't have that demeanor though. And it was
but he worked hard. It's like that's what I expected from Tomoaki Kanemoto with the Tigers, and he was this jovial, friendly, Uncle Tomo guy.
Well, he had the ruler out for Shintaro Fujinami to hit him across the knuckles, I think. But other than that, perhaps, yeah. He was harsh, though. He was harsh in his evaluation of the players. With Guts, I don't know. And I don't know, but he said, yeah, it was really hard to learn how to be a coach and how to communicate. And I think some of the harshness that comes across is that inability to communicate straight off the bat. So I'm curious to see how that goes. My feeling about why is he in Sapporo is, Hideki Kuriyama, the manager, basically gave them, he pulled the ejection seat handle last winter.
Right.
And the Fighters removed the explosive charge, and so it didn't work. So he's stuck in the cockpit, but he's going to figure that thing out, and he's going to want out of there pretty soon. And they wanted somebody there who could take over for him. The other one, Saito Takashi, is interesting. He's never been a coach before. He didn't expect to be a coach. He's only coaching because Shingo Takatsu, he said they were friends since college. They didn't go to the same university, but they were friends since they were pitching in college. So that's interesting. But he said he's got to learn how to do things like, you mean we have to count the pitches in the preseason? And, we've got to schedule this. And his fellow coaches basically gave him a workbook. Pitching coach lessons, because he's learning as he goes along. But he's such a smart, wonderful guy. And then there's of course Alonzo Powell, who we've talked to, who brings a lot of that MLB stuff, and it's really going to be fun. We've got so many guys with so much different experience that the Japanese baseball culture has changed. I expected this to be a change that was going to happen about 15 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
When a lot of players started coming back from the majors, but I think it is slowly taking hold. We have the head, the batting coach of the Oryx is So Taguchi, and the pitching coach and manager of the Marines, and the pitching coach and the manager of the Swallows have all played in the majors.
Right. Yeah, a lot of guys with a lot of quality experience, not just experience, but quality experience.
Yeah. So I think one of the things is with the Marines, the way Masato Yoshi is taking Roki Sasaki is we're going to treat him. We're not going to treat him in the Japanese way. We're going to treat him in the best way possible. And if that what that takes, it has nothing to do with what NPB writers or sports editors think is the way it should be done.
Correct.
It's going to be, you know, the best practices we can come up with, and anybody doesn't agree with it can go hang.
Right, right. Well, let's hope they stick to the plan. That's all I, you know, they can stick to the plan. That's what I want for them.
Well, he's a pretty stubborn cuss, so I imagine they're gonna.
Okay. All right. All right. Let's go to fielding questions. All right. The first one comes from Dragon Soul, and he's in Australia, and he said he actually what he did was write two replies to the Central League prediction show.
And okay.
So sometimes I always ask for comments. So he didn't really have a question. And I did give him a heads up and said, I'm going to extract part of your comments and then use them as talking points on the show. And
mm-hmm.
He didn't respond to my email, which means it's okay. So anyway, he said he just listened to the preview show. And while I'm stropy, I don't know what that means, over the slight of no invitation, because Dragon Soul, as you some of you might know on Twitter, he was a blogger for the Dragons, and we invited bloggers to come on and talk about the teams, and I did not invite him, but he had shut down his blogging, turned off his Dragon Soul Twitter account, and so I thought he was inactive, so that's the only reason I did.
Don't turn off, okay, so. Bloggers, don't turn off your transponders. We may need to find you.
That's right, so that's why. So, but then he says, I'm stropy over the slight of no invitation, but then in parentheses, he says, not really, I'd love to be able to be at that level one day. And he says, I quite enjoyed the overall view of the league. I felt the Dragons review was a bit underdone, sorry, but otherwise appreciated your optimistic look. And he's talking about me because I had the Dragons finishing in the playoffs. I think it was second, I think I had him. He says, I know what you mean regarding process and results, but for me, it's hard not to see a pattern of certain players not doing well in the preseason and getting plunked on the bench or the farm. And he's talking about the Dragons. Anyway, Dragon Soul said he hasn't had time to write his blogs, but he literally sent me enough material for two healthy size posts in his responses after listening to the show. So, like I said, I picked out some talking points, but anyone who has comments, like I always say, anyone who has comments, send them in, because I like to get into the talking points. So he's talking about in this particular one, the process, the results, and development. And it's all about player development. And, you know, I see expectations of fans. I see it on Twitter a lot. Like, this guy hit a home run this day in this particular park against this particular team. How come he can't do it again? And or this is what he, you know, once you see what a guy has done, you've seen the best of that guy, that sometimes becomes your expectation for what the guy should be. Or you've heard about someone hitting a bunch of home runs in high school and how come they can't do it on this level. And, you know, what I want to tell everybody who's an observer, like I am as well, is every player is different. And when you're talking about player development, I haven't developed any players myself. And
I was going to say, where would you put them in your apartment?
The only thing I can tell you is my experience is playing basketball, and I always draw my basketball experience because I played more than 10 years in a club situation. And I had, you know, players come and go on the teams that I played on, and I always worked with them. And I said, look, you know, it's not good enough to work on your weaknesses like everybody says. You've got to break yourself of poor habits, and you have to change your approach, and you have to change your thinking. And I had a guy come up to me in practice one day, and he said, you know, I feel like you guys throw me things, you could throw the ball to me in practices, but you don't do it in the game. And I said, well, have you ever seen me get the ball where I want in the game? And he said, well, you know, no. I said, why? I said, because I go and rebound it. Because guys on the professional level shoot, you know, if they're good, they shoot in the 50% range. That means half the time they're missing too. I said, the easiest way to get the ball is to go rebound it. So go get the ball. You know, don't tell me that people aren't passing you the ball. But anyway, to get back to it, I just said, you know, there's different ways. You have to change your approach. You have to not wait for things to come to you and have to develop. But you also need guys to, and this is where the coaches come in. Everybody has a homework assignment. Everyone says, okay, this is what you need to work on. But you need practical application. You can't just work on it in practice. You've got to get into game situations and then have that repetition in the game situation without the bad habit. And the result is going to be the result. You can't base everything on the results. You just have to have time and patience and to put it in. And I don't think fans have a lot of patience. I think once they see a guy and they think, okay, this is the expectation I have for this player, why isn't he doing that? And why don't I see that again? And so to go back to the Dragons now, to put all this into bow, I think we see guys come up and we see them. One example would be Yuya Yanagi. He, you know, had been really successful on every level that he had been at. And then he had a decent or okay debut with the Dragons. And then all of a sudden, he didn't look great. And I saw, you know, on Twitter, I saw people complaining. And I saw expectations were not being met in terms of their expectations. But I said, you know, guys have to adjust. And, you know, once you find out you move up to that level where you can't be dominant, you have to figure out what the circumstances are, what the game situations are, what the instructions that the coaches are giving you, and put that into play. And the only way you can do that is to go out and experience it and make the adjustments. And as Bobby Valentine told us before, you have to be allowed to fail. And once you're allowed to fail, then if you're good enough, you're going to make the adjustments. And if not, you won't. But, you know, given all that, I think the Dragons have seen players like the Nobumasa Fukuda, the Shuhei Takahashis, the Koji Fukutanis, and the Hiroshi Suzukis, and an entire stable of catchers. They've struggled. But on the other hand, you've got the Yohei Oshimas, who have been really good and, you know, came up through the system and been really good. And I think I can put Yanagi in that situation where he does look like a really professional pitcher, and it has come because they've developed him. And Shinnosuke Ogasawara, he has been really good, except he's had to deal with injuries. But other than the injuries, he looks good. And guys like Raidel Martinez, I'm only picking out guys in the past 3-4 years who have seemed to come along. And Yota Kyoda, they're all coming along. So I think, you know, if you look and see that the guys are not developing, it might not always be a case of the team not doing a good job in developing or giving them the homework or allowing them to fail. It might be that the guy's not that good, is not as good as we thought he was. Or, you know, maybe that player is just not able to make the adjustments. But I'm not sure that it's the entire team.
Well,
what do you think, Jim?
I think that close this.
I know that was a lot. That was a lot. I'm sorry.
Well, I think that's a huge part of the equation, and the other part of the equation is, you know, what I think when you said the players have to make the adjustments. Sometimes the players have to make the adjustments, not the best adjustments, but the adjustments that the team is expecting to see. Because they ain't looking other places. You know,
right.
They're not often looking at, they're not looking at what they don't expect to see.
Mm-hmm.
And the Dragons are pretty much famously bad at this. I did a study a couple of weeks ago about the value that the team's draft picks generated. And the Dragons, I think, were the worst in Japan, or next to the worst in Japan. And basically, yeah, they done poorly. It's interesting you picked up Nobumasa Fukuda, but he's a guy who was a really good minor league player. I mean, not an A-grade minor league player, but, you know, an A-minus. This is a guy who looked like he had a chance to be a really good hitter. And they just left him on the farm forever until he was about 27 years old. And... or 25 years old. I mean, but he was a quality hitter when he was 22 or 23. But the Dragons didn't notice it.
You say that, yeah, and you say that. And as soon as I saw him on the first team, when he sort of had a breakout season,
mm-hmm.
and hit a few home runs, I noticed that all he was doing was hitting fastballs, and that he couldn't really deal with breaking pitches.
Right, but
and I think that's still the case.
Yes,
he's
but,
a really good fastball hitter.
Right.
Who doesn't hit breaking
okay,
pitches very well.
But here's the point. I mean, he could have been, I'm saying not that he's a better player than you think, but I'm saying that he was basically a good player before the Dragons realized he was a good player. And he is what he is. Mm. I'm not saying he's a better player than he is, but I'm saying he is what he was years before the Dragons knew what he was. I mean, there was just his numbers, the performance. I've said this enough times that when you see bad performance, it doesn't really mean the guy's bad until he's been through about 2,000 or 3,000 plate appearances. Then you can kind of go, okay, this guy's really bad,
right?
Because eventually things work out. But when you see really, really good performance, you have to ask. The rule is this: if the guy is really, really good for any period of time on the farm team, that guy's a really good hitter. There aren't exceptions. There are not exceptions. There are only excuses for why he didn't make it. And the Dragons are masters of that. I mean, the famous one is Takeshi Yamasaki, who the Dragons just didn't like him because of his approach and his personality and whatever. And he was a catcher who couldn't catch. And he was a non-athletic hitting catcher and whatever. But they made excuses for a guy who was getting on base, who had basically every time they brought him up to the first team, he had close to a 400 on-base percentage and a 600 slugging average. And they kept saying, well, we got no place for this guy. Because they found excuses because they didn't like him. And what Dragon Soul said was, in his case, exactly appropriate. The only reason he had a career was because in 1997, he had a preseason in which he must have hit 15 home runs in the preseason. And basically, the only way the Dragons could keep him off the field was to move to another city and hide from the fans.
Right.
Because the fans would have burned down Nagoya Stadium. Not that it didn't deserve to be burned down or something. That's an outsider's pejorative view. But the point is, sometimes you have to have one of these spring trainings where what you do is in the public eye and people are looking for people to succeed. Now, when Yamasaki had that, then he won a home run crown in his first full season. And this is a guy who'd been doing it for about 4 years. It's not like nobody knew about it. And the other one was Shigenobu Shima of the Hiroshima Carp. He won a Central League batting title the first time they let him play on the first team. In that case, the owner didn't like him. The owner didn't want to see him playing on the farm team. The owner gave up on him. and it's hard to give that guy a chance until he turned it around all on his own, pretty much without, despite what the team was helping. It was making excuses why he couldn't play. Tom Davey told me a story, which may or may not be apocryphal, that when he joined the Hiroshima Carp and he was getting used to Japanese baseball on the farm team, one of the players took him aside at their little shabby farm facility down near Iwakuni and said, "You want to know who's the best hitter on the entire Carp team?" And they said, "You mean on the farm team?" No, he said, "No, I mean in the entire organization. It's that guy over there." And he was talking about Shigenobu Shima, who was basically stuck on the farm DHing in a league that didn't have a DH. So my point is the Dragons have been bad at that. That's the other equation. They've been worse than everybody. They've been pretty much worse than everybody else. And we could also say they've had bad draft picks, which may also be true. But yeah, they've been bad.
Okay. Yeah. I mean, I
they probably have a record for the most best nine awards won by people that they dumped from their farm team without really ever giving them a chance.
Yeah, I mean, I know I've heard you talk about that in the past, and I'm not here to defend their system.
I thought what you said is fair because there's a saying in baseball that you don't complain, get better.
Right.
Yeah. And the only answer for people won't choose me is to get better because you can't change people, you can only get better.
So that's greed? So that's the answer. I mean, regardless of what situation is, you can't change the way the team looks at you. You can only change what you do and then hope for the best, which is, you know, it's kind of fatalistic, but that's the truth. You can't change your team.
Okay. Yeah, we could talk about this all day.
and I have.
Yeah, well, the Wonder Twins are awake and making noise, so let's move on to the next question, but always appreciate it, and thank you for the talking
point,
Dragon Soul. Next one is from Wesley in Alabama, and he says, I'm quite addicted to Pro Yaku Spirits A, and that's a video game, I believe. And it's interesting, since I'm in Alabama, how detached from MPB I am, especially the CL, since I'm a Hawks fan, and the video game actually has introduced me to some players I didn't know. I noticed Swallows pitcher Scott McGaugh has a Pro Sippy, I don't know how to read it, A Arsenal, a shoot pitch, which got famous in the U.S. with Mr. Baseball, the movie. Something I've always called a reverse cutter or a tailing fastball, and I've never known American pitchers to throw it, at least since the 80s. So, does he actually throw something like that, or is it something he has learned, or is it something the game has just decided, the game, meaning the video game, has just decided that it looks like a shoot, or is the game just incorrect, which it has been in scouting sometimes. Anyway, thanks for this. Hashtag high heat. So I was going to ask Scott the next time I saw him, but Jim did some research.
Well, all I can tell you is I'm not familiar whether he throws the shooto, which it sounds better than a shoot for some reason. Shooto, maybe it's the shooto, as they call it in Japan. And what is the shooto? As in Japan, it depends on what you call your pitch more than what it does.
Right.
Yesterday they were saying, it was funny because they were trying, because Carter Stewart's curveball is faster than a lot of people's sliders, that they kept wanting to call it a slider until they put it in slow motion, and they kept going, no, that's a curveball. That's how you spin a curveball. That ain't no slider unless he's trying to throw it vertically. You know.
If we ask Yasuaki Yamasaki what his pitches are and what the announcers call it, I think we come up with different ones.
Right. Yeah. So anyway, to make a short story long. Yeah, I've already done that before. Okay, but to make a long story short, I don't know if he does, but a shooto is essentially, for most part, it's an off-center fastball. Essentially, it's a reverse cutter. The idea is to keep it from sinking as much as a two-seam sinker, and running in more on a right-handed batter. It gives the pitch the less quality spin. And not so less vertical movement and more horizontal movement, and that's essentially the idea. And does Scott throw one? I don't know. Delta Graphs and Tsubasa's the digital Kyoto Digital's analysis site, which I find maddeningly difficult to use, do not have any recollection of him throwing a shooto, but that's a pitch analysis. It's really hard. These things are all done on, you know, by how much they believe the pitch moves and where it moves and whatnot. And Tsubasa did have him throwing a two-seam sinker, and that is maybe what it is. But again, nobody knows. But I'll give you my brief insight into game making and NPB. In 1995, when I started writing, I was asked to analyze basically the pitching arsenal for a video game of every Japanese pitcher. You know what happens? You're just going on a checklist. Does he have this? Maybe. Does he have this? Is it good? Oh, I don't know. You know, I mean, it's just a huge list of pitchers, and you got to go through them. And, you know, you could ask 100 people and they wouldn't necessarily give you good answers. I mean, you know, I asked people. I asked all the people I knew who knew, which wasn't a lot. So my guess is somebody watched him pitch once and saw that his fastball had a lot of arm side run than they expected. And the announcer said, oh, that has what they call in Japan the shooto spin, which is mm-hmm. the back spin in the direction of the batter. So that was probably it. But okay. A lot of pitchers get that when they don't grip the ball exactly the way they imagine. So he may have it, he may not. My guess is he probably throws a couple of sinkers that go that way, or maybe his fastball, he just grips it a little bit more to one side now and then.
Okay. Well, I promised to ask him the next time I see him, mm-hmm. so we'll get back to you on that one. But
so you'll have to shuto that to him.
Right out of the shuto. All right. One notice. Now, we are, as of yet, not under lockdown here in Tokyo or Japan, but we don't have a lot to discuss for the show. So God willing, we won't have a lockdown, and I can get out to some parks. And I think, Jim, are you planning to go? We're having
I have to look at the schedule. I don't have a plan for the next couple of days, but I have a couple of players on.
Okay, well, we can line up some interviews.
Yeah,
we can line up some interviews and do some telephone talk and all that stuff. But I'm going to ask you guys to let us know if you want more JBW episodes. So give us a shout out on Twitter or Facebook, or send an email. Just let us know that you want to hear more content, and we can do a show. I mean, it's not like it's going to be difficult for us to do it. We just have to sit down and find the time to chat. And I think Jim and I can do that. So if I receive enough, I'm not going to set a number or a quota. If I receive enough feedback, then we will do a show. I don't have a number in my head, but it's something that moves me, something that moves Jim, and says, hey, the people want to hear us, so let's do a show. But if you don't, and you know, there's no real baseball to talk about, these practice games are half visible or viewable and half not. You know, we've got YouTube, you've got PL, Paulleague TV, you've got Rakuten TV, DAZN, all these other places where it's possible, but I don't know how much of the games are going to be on. Maybe we'll see something exciting, maybe we won't. So let us know, hit us up, and let us know if you want us to continue doing shows during this hiatus. And send us high heat questions. That's always a way to get in and get us to talk about your team. Questions, comments, criticism, anything we can discuss on the show, just like we did with Dragon Soul. And we appreciate his allowing us to use his comments. And Wesley, we hope to hear back from you as well. We will talk to you next time. Hit us up on Twitter at JBW Podcast with the hashtag High Heat. Questions go to YAKYUJOHN@gmail.com. And you can hit us up as usual on the Facebook page. We'll talk to you next time. Enjoy whatever this is.
Well, see you around, and we'll be waiting for the hiatus heat.